Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Roughly 15,000 children are living in some form of foster care in Ohio. Often they are stereotyped as the problem, but nothing could be farther from the truth. They are the victims of financially unstable families, drug-addicted parents, abuse, neglect, rejection. But foster parents also face stereotypes. That's what we're talking about today. Joining us right now is the Associate Director for Provider Services at Franklin County Children's Services, Linda McKnight. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Ann.
Is that a fancy title for somebody who works with foster parents?
Yes. Our division here at Franklin County, our Provider Services, works with, we contract out to about 25 different foster care agencies, private agencies, in the community, and we work with them to find the best match for kids that are coming into foster care with the right foster parent.
When you're working with so many different agencies, do you see different values at those agencies?
The values are about the same. The state licenses all foster homes, so there's roles no matter what agency you're with. The roles are the same, and the guidelines that you have to follow are the same. Each agency kind of has a little different in the population that maybe they specialize in, or some different support systems that they might be able to provide foster parents.
So do they employ different strategies for recruiting foster parents?
They do. And we're at a challenge right now because we need more foster parents. And we need to think outside the box about who those foster parents can be. Per the rule for the state, you just have to be 21 years of age and you have to have a stable income. There's a lot of other background checks, but that's like the basis. So we need to start to look at that and where we can find additional pool of people that would be willing to be forever families for our kids.
We're talking about foster parents today and some of the stereotypes that they face and the challenges and the successes. My guest right now, Linda McKnight. She's Associate Director for Provider Services at Franklin County Children's Services. This hour, we would love to hear from foster parents about your experience, your struggles, your successes. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. That's a good place to start as well. What are you looking for besides that 21 and stable income?
We just need a person who's committed to be in a forever family, giving a child to meet all their basic needs, but also understand that that child has come with struggles. They've had trauma. That's why they're part of our system. And being patient and helping them work through that trauma to be successful in school, in the neighborhood, to become a successful young person.
How do you screen? How are they screened? What are you screening out and screening in?
Well, there's a background check that they have to do. All the police and BCI, FBI checks that you must do. There's a 36 hours. It usually takes about 6 to 8 weeks of training that they must go through. They talk about different kinds of kids, what you might expect, what the rules are, so everybody understands what they can do and what they can't do, and just be able to open your heart and your house to some of these kids that have some difficulties along the way, have no fault of their own.
Does the process screen out people in and of itself in that they don't have that much time or it seems overwhelming to a lot of people?
A lot of people, I wouldn't say a lot, but there's a fair number that won't pass the background checks as we start, or they get into the classes and they think, oh, this is not for me. This is way more than I thought it was going to be. So it's come kind of self-screening. And occasionally we have people that come through that we feel like maybe it would not be a good fit. So we try to explain to them why we wouldn't think that maybe fostering might not be a good fit for them, but maybe being a mentor or a volunteer with our children might be a better fit for them. We try to make sure that what they're doing and what they choose to do kind of all, I would say, fits. And so it's a win-win for us and for them. So we don't want them to have a poor experience with fostering either.
When they sign up to be a foster parent, do they choose an age group?
Yes, you have the ability to choose an age group, if you have male or female in your house. Some people, just based on the size of their house and the rules, kids have to share bedrooms, and so there's rules about that. So you might just say, I need just females in my home. I do better with school-age kids. I do better with babies. We have a pool of foster parents that likes to have teens. They do really well with teens. They don't do really well with babies. So we try to help them find their strengths.
Mm-hmm. That's part of the process.
Right.
Talk about some of the myths of foster parenting, some of the reasons you've learned that people avoid it or don't even think it's right for them because they don't understand it.
Well, I think a lot of people are afraid of the background check. It is very evasive.
Now, for one thing, do they have to check the box, the felon box?
Yes, okay. They do. And they have to have fingerprints, and it is very invasive. They come to your home. They walk through your home. You have to have an inspection of your house. They ask you a lot of personal questions because we want to make sure we're doing the best screening that we can. If you have birth kids or adoptive kids, we might speak to those kids also to talk about things. We ask for references, just as if you were going to a job. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty invasive process, but that's because we want to make sure that it's the right fit for you as a family, plus that we're touching all bases mm-hmm. to make sure our kids are safe. So I think a lot of people sometimes are turned off because it could be very invasive especially if they're a little private. A lot of times, too, they think about the money part of it. We do pay foster parents to parent, but by no means will that cover even one-tenth of what we're asking you to do.
That might be one of the myths out there about people think, well, they just rake it in and they're only doing it for the money.
Exactly. We pay, Franklin County Children's Services pays a set amount to an agency for every child we place. That private agency then gives part of that money to a foster parent. But in no way does it cover school clothes, activity fees, extracurricular activities. It doesn't. It's like a token amount. So if you say keep people foster for the money, that's the farthest thing from the truth.
And on the same token, people who want to foster children, it's not like they have to gird themselves for all the financial responsibility of raising a child, but a lot of those things you just mentioned, participation fees, clothes, those are things that matter to kids when they're growing
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And there are ways sometimes our kids qualify for certain things. Just because they're in foster care doesn't mean that they wouldn't qualify for some state programs that would assist sliding scale-free lunches, that will help with fees for school, for supplies or pay for play, those kind of things. So there is, based on that particular child, there is some assistance for a foster family.
I want to bring to our conversation now former foster parent and founder and executive director of Bike Lady, Kate Koch. Welcome to the show.
It's good to see you, Ann. Thanks.
When I was looking on the Facebook page for Bike Lady, someone asked, well, why can't the foster parents provide bikes for foster kids? And what was your response?
Well, first I said it was a great question.
Yeah, it is.
You know, just like this, for sure. It turned out that she was actually a kinship care person, but many, many of her experience, she felt that maybe they were using money inappropriately that they did receive. That was her, you know, microcosm that she had seen. But I sent a really long response.
You did. Could you shorten it
it's
up
gone.
A little bit here?
The beauty of delete.
Yeah. Thank you, Facebook.
Yeah, right. But basically, I did explain to her that I'd looked it up because I called other friends of mine that are still active foster parents. I certainly remembered what my stipend was and what's the current stipend. And so the one girlfriend that I called, she said it's $25 a day. It goes up like $9 if you have $9 a day if you work full time and your child is in full time daycare. Well, $9 a day isn't going to cover your daycare.
True.
Right. But so I just sat down with my calculator in Google. And if you base it on $25 a day and you look over age 18 and you extrapolate it and put it through, project it through cost of living, I mean, I ran that number and it is a below poverty income level of what an individual in America would spend on their child, they would be below poverty level.
And
I responded that to her. I said, you know, this is why they need bikes. They can't, the foster parent is often a kinship care parent. They're worried about turning the back porch into a bedroom for three kids that they are agreeing to bring into their home to keep the family together. They're thinking about dinner. They're not thinking about a bike. And So that's why we need, as a community, to step up and provide somehow.
Yeah, Linda McKnight, you need more. You said you need more foster parents. A lot of them are kinship, meaning that they're related to them already.
Correct,
and that's
correct.
Something people don't understand often.
Right. We our goal at Franklin County is to find permanency for kids. And one of the first things we look at is kin. Is there kin out there that can take children and be able to provide them with a stable home until they can go home to their birth parents or to emancipate? So we all do look with kin. But unfortunately, just like Ann had said, you know, some of these families are just middle class families themselves. And you ask them to take three additional children, that's quite a financial burden to them. And so we as an agency try to help them with the cost of raising three additional kids. And organizations such as Ann's helps also. Yes.
Kate's,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's good.
So does Ann. Ann helps too.
I try.
You do.
I certainly don't do enough. If you have a question or comment, once again, we'd love to hear from foster parents. We just need your first name. You don't need to worry about identifying yourself beyond that. 614-292-8513. The show today is about foster parenting. Foster kids, of course, are always part of that conversation, but we're trying to look at the myths and talk about the realities of modern foster parenting today. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Most of what we know about foster parents emerge in the headlines. It's often disturbing. Linda McKnight, when that happens, when something bad happens, what's the pushback from where you sit? What do you see? Do you see a drop in people interested in it?
No, I think that just the opposite.
Okay.
I think most foster parents, when they see that, they're like, they don't want that to be the representation of their group. And they kind of rise to the moment and try to be more vocal. But that is not who we are. That is not why we do what we do. So I think, and we as an agency, I have thousands of foster parents. And that's, you know, that's just a minute percentage that we see in the news. And I think about all the good things that foster parents do every day to make things good for kids.
How are foster parents nurtured?
They have support. Each agency has support staff that is there for that foster parent to help them get through difficulties in the child's case. How do I handle this particular situation?
Yeah.
This never happened to me before. What do I do? Plus, they're required to go to ongoing training throughout their foster parent yearly. They have to have so many hours of training. And as a support person, they kind of try to gear them toward training about that might be beneficial to the type or age group of kids that are going to be in their home.
We're talking about foster parenting today. My guest, Linda McKnight, she's Associate Director for the Provider Services at Franklin County Children's Services, and also Kate Koch.
Cook.
I knew I was mispronouncing. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I'm sorry.
I'm used to it.
Anyways, she's the founder and Executive Director of of Bike Lady and the Foster Hope Joyride. It's a new fundraiser for Bike Lady. It's scheduled for Saturday, October 10th. For more information, you can go to the link on our website at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about foster parenting today, the challenges, the rewards, and the downsides. Still with us, joining us is the Associate Director for Provider Services at Franklin County Children's Services, Linda McKnight. Welcome again, Linda.
Thank you.
And former foster parent and founder and executive director of Bike Lady, Kate Cook.
Hi, Ann. It's good to be here again.
And joining us now are two foster parents, Emily Castle. Welcome to the show, Emily.
Hi. Well, thanks.
And Sarah Hammond. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
If you are a foster parent, Want to join the conversation? Tell us about your experiences. We'd love to hear them. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Before we go on too much, Kate Cook, I want you to talk about Bike Lady. I say you're a former foster parent. Aren't you always kind of once a foster parent, always a foster parent? But yeah. Tell us about Bike Lady, how it started and where it's gone.
Right. So so my kids, who I affectionately refer to publicly as him and her.
Yeah.
They are kindergarten and second grade. They both came to me as infants from Franklin County Children's Services and then ultimately became permanent placement and, you know, a final adoption. And as my daughter was turning one, she's a Christmas baby, and I was married at the time. My husband and I wanted to do a little something. We were happy. I was 41. He was like 46. We're first-time parents. And so working with the Holiday Wish program that Franklin County Children's Services runs of what's a little something extra that you need, you know, at Holiday Wish time, and we came to the conclusion of bikes. So, you know, long story short, 8 years ago, I went to go buy a couple bikes, and then you wrote a column at the Dispatch, and people said—
It was more than a couple bikes, but go on.
Well, yeah, I mean,
it was
I
like
started—
a fleet.
I was going to do 10. It became 26. I don't usually do things quietly or small, right?
Yeah, right.
And then your column is what made it stick, because people said, well, I can get behind that. I remember my first bike. Every kid should have a bike. There's just, this is a no-brainer, and there's no argument about it. You know, I incorporated it. It's this nice little charity. Okay, I'll do a couple hundred bikes every year. And then it was another former foster parent who also, so I ended up adopting a second time. I have my nice little family. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't have the calling as I have friends with Emily and Sarah. Sarah, I think, has fostered 300 children. You know, she has it in her. This is what she needs to
Whoa.
Do. No, maybe
it's
not
really
300.
Seven.
Okay.
Sometimes it feels like 300.
And there
right.
you go
there
again,
there
doing things big.
There are people out there that have fostered hundreds of kids,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
This was how I formed my family, you know, and I would like to continue fostering, but for me to continue fostering, that does not fit in my family's lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? But I want to continue serving that population. And I'm tied to that population. My kids are tied to that population.
Well, tell us, how many bikes are you up to?
We're going to go just about over 5,000 this year. I mean, in a month, we'll have hit the lifetime 5,000. So, you know, 4 years ago, it was another foster parent that she said, well, what are you going to do with Bike Lady? How are you going to grow it? You know, and she was the same. She was done fostering. She'd adopted. She wanted to do something too. She didn't want to just walk away from, mm-hmm. you know, that relationship. And I said, I need to find a way to have labor because it's just a volunteer thing. I don't have a warehouse. I don't have people. And I was buying them all retail. And she said, call a prison. And, you know, so, wow, that just became a whole, I went into prison and that has become a whole, I would say, secondary aspect of Bike Lady,
yeah.
but it's not secondary. That, for me personally, the prison programming has become as important to me as the providing bikes to foster care. For me
What's
personally.
The connection?
Well, there's a lot of kids in foster care because their parents are incarcerated.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing right there. Kids are not in foster care because they're delinquents, and that's a misconception in the United States. 51% of people believe that kids are in the foster care system because they were the bad kid, and they're not at all. So you have that aspect of it, and then kids that emancipate out of the system without permanency, and it ridiculously high percentage end up either homeless or incarcerated in a very short period of time. So there's a circle here that if we don't better serve our community's children, and these children do belong to the entire community, then we just keep feeding the prison population.
So you're still right. There's a connection there. There's a cyclical
Absolutely.
Connection
Absolutely.
There. You're just listening to Kate Cook. She's former foster parent and founder and executive director of Bike Lady, Inc. We'll talk about that some more in just a minute. I want to reintroduce our other guests, Sarah Hammond and Emily Castle, both foster parents. Sarah Hammond, it's not hundreds. It's eight.
We've had seven so far.
You've had seven so far. Why did you get into fostering?
To be honest, we thought that's how we were going to grow our family, through adoption, through the foster care system being a permanent placement. Through time, that's changed. we had surprise kids of our own and wanted to keep fostering. We saw the need for it. I think our hearts can be tugged and torn for things we see globally, whether it's hunger, poverty, different things, but that's happening in our own community, in our own backyard, and how much of a difference we can make when we're working with families who could be our neighbors and building families within our county.
And so you're looking more for kids that are on the idea is to get them back with their birth parents.
Yes, I would say that's one of Franklin County's bigger goals. Mm-hmm. Secondary or hand in hand with it is getting them to family members. But we've had kids, all of our kids have gone to family members, to their own family members.
Linda McKnight, how many kids, do we have a sense about how many kids actually do end up only being foster kids for a temporary period and going back to family?
Well, the goal is permanency, and that's overarching. And
however that's defined.
Right,
yeah.
However that's defined, and that's kind of how we look at it. So whether that means going back to their birth parent because they were able to reunify, or going with kin, or then becoming an adoption or a permanent placement within a foster home.
I wanted to talk with you both, and also I wanted to ask Emily Castle, another foster parent, why you got into it.
I got into it because my parents were foster parents before I was born. And so I always grew up knowing that that was something that I would want to try. And then when I did it, I loved working with the birth families, you know, helping to teach them to parent and helping them to find resources in the community and really working towards returning those children. And then I also ended up adopting from the system as well.
So do you continue to foster, though?
I don't right now.
You aren't right now.
Our home is
okay.
Closed for right now.
Okay.
She has a newborn.
Yeah,
right. I have five kids.
Yeah, right.
Wow. Okay, so Sarah Hammond, you continue to foster.
Correct.
You have other children
yes.
in the home. A myth, I think a lot of people worry about fostering when they have other kids in the home.
It is. It can be. There can be highs and lows.
Because of the disruption.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My kids get excited, and then they get sad if somebody leaves, and it's a big up and down. We spend a lot of time in prayer, praying for the right child to come to our home next, and
that fits right.
Right,
and work.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about foster parenting today. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from foster parents. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Foster Hope Joyride to benefit Bike Lady, Inc. It's a charity to provide bicycles for foster kids, and not just in Franklin County, but in surrounding counties, and now beyond.
Yeah, last year we did 20. Last year I had three prisons running. So,
right, right.
Yeah, we got all four corners. I mean, when I start. It's a toss, right? I throw mm-hmm. the pebble in the pond here, and Franklin County is always the first priority. The contiguous counties are the second priority. But, you know, I have one donor. I have donor-defined things. So I have one donor up in Lucas County, Toledo. We run a prison program there. Last year, we were able to expand to all contiguous counties in Northwest. Last year, I added Grafton, which is Lorain County.
Grafton Prison, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah, and correctional facility, yeah. So that got us up in Marin County, east of Cleveland. And then, you know, I do try and focus down towards southeast, just from mm-hmm. an Appalachia perspective. We got 150 bikes or 25 to Cincinnati, to Hamilton County last year. You know, the money goes as far as the money goes. So it really is just defined by the generosity of the community.
To learn more about the Foster Hope Joyride this Saturday, you can go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. As Kate Cook mentioned earlier, Linda McKnight, the bicycling was one thing kids could do, and that always shocked me. I think when I wrote the column back in the day about that some eight or 9 years ago
mm-hmm.
now, that was a shock to me that kids were so limited in foster homes as to what they could do. They can't do sleepovers. They can't jump on trampolines. They can't go to the community pool, and on and on and on without
often the issue is whether or not their foster parent is with them. And, well, you know, as kids are getting older, they don't want their parent with them, right, all the time. How big of a drag is that? But Linda McKnight, you were telling me things are starting to change.
Yes, fortunately, Ohio has kind of came up to speed and realized how traumatic that could kind of be for kids to be labeled as foster care, right, and not be able to do the things that their peers can do. So there's been some legislation that's been passed in the state of Ohio, and it's called Prudent Parent. And all 88 counties have to implement it. Some have did so far. Franklin County is has a policy that is we're working through to implement soon. And as Sarah had said, we're doing some training at the end of the month about that. And basically, the overview is you as a foster parent can make prudent parent decisions about what your child, a foster child, can or cannot do.
Based if you think they're mature enough to go into a sleepover.
Exactly. Then okay, that's going to be a call that foster parent, with the help of the agency and with the help of their foster care agency, to be able to make. And kids are going to be able to be. It's more like normalizing kids that are in care.
Emily Castle, I don't know if you mostly did infants or older kids.
Infants.
Okay. So that really never became much of an issue for you.
No, but child care becomes difficult.
Okay.
So to get a babysitter, they have to be background checked and approved. Oh. And so it can be a challenge. Traveling is difficult.
Why is that?
You have to get approval from the agency in a travel letter. Often you need approval from the birth parents to travel. And so I was really lucky, and I had birth parents that allowed me to take my children to Hawaii, out of state to New York, all over the country, but a lot of parents don't approve that.
Huh. And Sarah Hammond, what about you?
We've done a lot of younger children, but this summer I had the privilege of having a teenager in my home during the days because, with some of the rules, she was newly into care and could not be by herself. And when you think about a teenager who's come into care, they've probably mostly been by themselves all the time, caring for themselves, and all of a sudden they have to be latched to an adult that's approved all the time. And I really felt from her, she knew her life was not normal right now. This was not normal. This is not what normal kids have to do. So she really felt that and opened my eyes to things that are different in a foster care perspective.
Did you talk about it with her?
Oh, yes. We had a lot of conversations, a lot of things she knew, even just going into a new school and what a new school year was going to be like with other kids and how that was just going to affect what she could or couldn't do with friends that she would make.
And you talked to her about what the rules are.
And sometimes they're not fair. And you can say, it's not fair, and I'm so sorry, but this is what we have to do. And there's a reason for it. Mm-hmm. There's a reason these rules are in place.
Tell us about the background of these rules, Linda McKnight. Why was it the way it was, and why is it changing?
It all based on safety. I mean,
liability,
but, you know, trying to keep kids safe. And unfortunately, just as Sarah said, some of our kids come into, they've have to parent themselves, they've had to parent siblings, and maybe don't always make the best choices. And so us saying, okay, till we get to know you, till we can see where you're coming from and the trauma that you had, to make sure you'll make good choices. So it was all about safety. But as we learned, our kids need to be normal. They don't need to be labeled as foster kids. They're just like the kid around the corner. They should be able to do the kids around. They should be able to go to prom. They should be able to go to football games. They should be able to ride their bike, you know, more than two houses down. And we expect, you know, try to help our kids learn to get jobs and be self-sufficient. And a lot of kids, like Kate said, you know, might use that bike for transportation to their job at the fast food restaurant and things like that. So I think the state as a whole, it's a fine balance between safety and being able to let kids lead the normal, for lack of a better word, type life that they should.
What is the experience like? And, you know, we were talking earlier about getting permission from birth parents to do this and that. What's that like? How does that work?
Well, usually the agency sometimes could be an intermarriage.
They are the guardian.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But also, too, most birth families, when they first children are moved from, they're very anxious and upset. But I have so many foster parents that just, like Emily's, able to bridge that gap and are really work really well with foster parents. And then birth families come to find them as a support system and as an ally to them, and really realize that a lot of foster parents really want to work with that birth family to get their child back into that birth home, because that's the best place, you know, for that child.
And is it sometimes a situation where they're sort of learning from the foster family?
A lot of times. And we ask foster parents when they bring kids for visits to interact with birth families, to answer questions, to let birth families come to medical appointments, to be involved and embrace that as kind of like a parent mentor to that family. So I think as a birth family becomes more familiar and feels more comfortable with an foster family, they're more easy to be able to say, oh yes, I want my kid to do that. I want my kid to be able to go and have that experience with their foster parent.
Emily Castle, did you does it feel like you're teaching a little bit, you're mentoring?
Absolutely. Yeah. You help them find resources in the community. You help answer questions about normal development. You know, sometimes they're anxious that their child isn't walking yet or isn't on track, and you can kind of mentor, you know, what's typical for children.
Uh-huh.
I also think it's important because if the children end up staying with you forever, you have a connection to that birth family. I know in the case of my children, I can tell them about what their parents, you know, what they're interested in, what they sounded like, what...
even though they may not have contact
yeah,
with them anymore,
yeah,
you can tell them
about that. Even though they've been adopted.
And that matters to a kid.
Absolutely. It's part of their history. You need to respect it.
Right. We're talking about foster parenting, the myths or realities. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from foster parents, but you're probably too busy to call right now, I would suspect. But if you can squeeze us in, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And you can check out our Facebook page as well to post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about foster parenting today, the challenges, the rewards, and the downsides. Still with us, Associate Director for Provider Services at Franklin County Children's Services, Linda McKnight. Also, former foster parent and founder and executive director of Bike Lady, Inc., Kate Cook, and also two foster parents, Emily Castle and Sarah Hammond. If you're a foster parent, want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Linda McKnight, when I've had these programs before, people don't call in. They don't want to seem to share their experiences. Are they not allowed to? What is there a rule about how much people can talk about what they're doing?
And there's confidentiality
yeah.
rules. I mean, people that are foster parents say they're foster parents. We often refer to their kids by their first name. We don't want them to be ashamed that they have foster kids, or the foster care should be ashamed that they're into foster care.
Mm-hmm.
But there are confidentiality rules that you shouldn't be sharing personal business, kind of like HIPAA,
yeah.
You know, out there.
Right.
So sometimes they're reluctant, or they'll just say, this has been my experience, not talking about, you know, specific kids.
Right.
And we have to respect those kids.
It's a little bit of a disconnect, because you have sort of the same joys and pratfalls as any parent. And we talk about those all the time as parents. Sarah Hammond, I mean, how do you find yourself stopping and thinking twice when you talk about your foster kids?
Yes, a lot of times. But I think part of it is you have a good support system. Not everybody understands. I don't think everybody understands, unless you're a foster parent, what you go through. You can build a really good support system, but I found some of the people that I can talk to best are other foster parents who have gone through it, or can say, you need to do that. Talk to this person. Get this agency involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're one of our biggest resources, other foster parents.
Yeah. Emily Castle?
I think one of the challenges from a support perspective is you have to be very careful about sharing information and images as well. So you can't put their pictures on Facebook. You need to be really protective of that because it's not your information to share.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, close family and friends may know a lot of, may know the child really well, but your greater social circle probably doesn't, you know, may have only seen the back of the head,
mm-hmm.
because you can't post pictures.
Mm-hmm. And so many people post pictures of their kids on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Graduation, from kindergarten, all the way up through high school. They're proud. It's a source of pride. And being a foster parent, you have to be proud all the time.
We are so proud. I had a hard time because it was just my little one's two-year-old birthday. And I wanted to show pictures just like I do with my other kids. And that was just really hard, a hard time.
Yeah, yeah. How do you bridge that kind of emotional?
We try to explain it. And I think they put it, Sarah put it, unless you've lived it, you really don't understand it. And we can explain it and what you're going to experience. But until you live it, you don't. And we encourage foster parents to have find support systems. And a lot of the agencies have foster parent groups that meet regularly to give that support so they can have similar experiences and discussions about stuff
and moments of pride and sharing and all that kind of stuff that we do. Anyways, I want to turn to Herschel now in Columbus. Hi, Herschel. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning. I don't have a question, but rather an observation.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter and my son-in-law are foster parents. And we love those children. And I just wanted to say, in fact, they have adopted one of the children. And I wanted to thank those that take on this responsibility to make sure that all of our children have quality of life and are working with parents to help them to restore families and bring them together. And so my daughter, they're and son-in-law, they're young people, but I just appreciate so much that they're doing to reach out to make families whole.
Thank you so much, Herschel. I think you raised such an important issue, and that is it's not just a foster parent, it's a foster family. There's an extended family. Thanks for that call, Herschel. Emily Castle, right?
Yeah, and it's something to consider as you get into it, because your parents, you know, the grandparents, aunts and uncles, everybody falls in love with these children, and it's a commitment that you as a parent are making, but yet it impacts your entire extended family, because they will fall in love with them and then maybe say goodbye to them.
But for the child, all the richer for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we receive the training. The foster parents are the ones that receive the training, and this is what could happen or will happen. The extended family don't necessarily receive that training, so their heart breaks when kids leave or different things happen with them.
Right, but sometimes there's stigma associated to Kate Cook.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned during the break that I had people close in my life that did not feel it was appropriate for me to do Bike Lady or to share why I was doing Bike Lady, that I'd adopted my children and I should keep it just this nice little family circle of where my kids came from. Why? Why wouldn't
not
I share
that? Adopted,
not
that
they were adopted,
were
but that they came from Franklin County Children's Services first. I fostered them first, and then permanency became available. And maybe that's something we should talk about, that process of how that happens. But we could adopt them, and we did. And they didn't. These people close to me said, "No, you can't tell people that. You can't tell people that." And to Emily's point that she said 5 minutes ago, this is my children's history, and I respect it. I need my children to have self-respect for it, so that whether they are 14 or 40, they can say, yeah, I'm adopted. Yeah, thank God for foster care. You know, it's cool.
Yeah.
And that's it. Not, oh,
the
no.
stigma. You must deal with that all the time, Linda McKnight.
They do. And we really try. And I also am an adoptive mom. My son is 20. He will tell anybody that he was in foster care. I did not adopt him from Franklin County, from another county in Ohio. But he will tell when he was 6 years old, so he knew his birth parents. But he will tell anybody about his foster care experience. It made him who he is, and he understands that. So we try to encourage our kids to be true to themselves and who they are, and embrace what their history is, because it makes you who you are.
It's their story.
Sure.
Joe in Berea, you're on the air. Hi, Joe. Oh. Okay, Joe and Berea, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
I
just wanted to make a comment.
Sure.
I was a foster parent many years ago. And I fostered in three states, and we loved foster parenting. And again, it was a family concept. We voted for this. So we had three birth children. We did not take foster children until our youngest child was four. And we always kept the foster children younger than our birth children.
Okay.
But over the years, we've fostered over 50 children.
Over 50?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. What motivated you to do it?
I don't know. It was just something my husband and I decided to do. And we started out in Virginia. And in that day and age, you could not even know another foster parent. You couldn't know a birth parent. There were stipulations all over the place. But while we were there, that county held the first foster parent meeting. They had a box luncheon from Kentucky Fried Chicken in a church basement and invited the foster parents. And that was the very first foster parent meeting in that area.
That must have been a revelation.
It was fabulous. I mean, we worked hard for that, you know.
It just seems so illogical not to see foster parents as a group, a support group. Linda McKnight, a lot has changed.
Absolutely. We work really hard because the more support we can give foster parents, it's best for our kids.
Yeah.
So, the thought is, though, we would like to normalize our kids also. So you'll meet a family and these are my kids.
Yeah.
They don't say these are my foster kids and these are my birth kids and these are my adopt. These are my kids. And Joey and Susie and these are my kids. And we embrace that people will take them into their home, their extended family, and they become part of their family.
Well, Joe in Berea, Ohio, thank you so much for calling. Wow, can you imagine being in an era when you weren't allowed to even know other foster parents?
That would have been so hard. It was such a support system for me, meeting foster parents and training. And those are the people that stick with me 10 years later as I have questions and behaviors pop up and I'm not sure what to do. Those are the people you turn to.
Yeah, exactly. Sarah Hammond?
Other foster parents are, first of all, inspiring. And then also, I mean, I have a group of foster families, foster friends through our agency where we've just decided and taken it upon ourselves to get together as much as we can. Sometimes we'll just go to somebody's house and play. And by this, one of the interesting things that came from it, we thought it was important for us as foster parents to get that support. It was important for the kids. The kids knew each of the foster parents and each other, and they were going through the same things, so they could kind of relate to one another. But if they had to go to another family for care, for respite, for babysitting, they knew these moms. They knew the kids in that house, and they were excited about it, and they could ask for help, and it wasn't this scary, strange thing.
Yeah, because I would imagine in other foster families automatically kind of screened, right?
Yes.
For babysitting.
Exactly. Exactly. But it is helpful, Sarah, if kids know them.
Yes.
And it's not like you're just dropping them off for the first time. Oh, we seen you last week at the barbecue. Or, you know, they know who those people are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense. Liz in Columbus, you're a caseworker. Welcome to the show, Liz.
Hi. I love so much that you all are talking about this. And I just want to say thank you to the foster parents who are on your show right now. It's so encouraging to hear about good foster parents, because as a caseworker explaining to people what I do, it's always the first thing like, oh, that must be so sad. But there are like good stories and good foster parents and happy endings. So it's encouraging to hear that. I just wanted to see if the foster parents could speak a little bit to how they have had to advocate for their kids while in care. Maybe around medication or around permanency, because I know a lot of foster parents just personally who are sometimes fearful in stepping into that role. So how have you advocated for your kids sometimes when that's needed, if possibly getting stuck in the system or some things not falling in place like they should?
Okay. Thank you, Liz. Liz, before I let you go, though, could you give me an example of what you mean?
Sure. Sometimes, like, we have measures in place where kids aren't supposed to stay in the system longer than 2 years. And we have guardian ad litems and therapists who are working with families and kids to make sure that that doesn't happen. But sometimes things fall through the cracks. Judges change or lawyers change, and kids are sometimes stuck in a place that makes it hard for them to move forward and get permanency or move towards that adoption or reunification with their birth families. So a lot of foster parents I've found are sometimes afraid to speak up for their kids because they think that means that they'll be removed from their home or that they'd be working against the team to make the best choice for the child.
Okay. All right. Emily Castle, you're nodding your head.
Yeah. Some of my children were in foster care for more than 4 years before I was able to adopt them. So one of the things that I did was went to every single court date. So that I was a continuous source of information. Caseworkers change, attorneys change, judges change, but you as the foster parent can be the one constant in that child's case so that you can remind the attorneys or the guardian ad litem who hasn't met the child, mm-hmm. you know, here's some specifics about the case. Here's some things that have happened. Here's some things that we've tried. And so that you can advocate for your child. So I went to every single court date. I was in there. The judge knew I was there. I provided my input when they asked for it.
But it's not required.
Oh, absolutely not. Nope.
Sarah Hammond, what about you?
I agree that going to the court dates are important. Like she said, so many things change, the workers and everything. You are the one constant source of information. Try to be unbiased if you can. I've also found whether it's that need, a permanency need, or even a physical need, getting your child the help you need, you are the sounding board and that can get that information where it needs to. One tool that I have found is getting any workers or meetings you have, try to get them all in the same place at the same time. We're required to have our agency, our worker, and possibly some other people meet once a month at your home. I try to get them at the same time so that they can all hear the same story of what's going on in this child's case, that we were better advocating for them.
Yeah, and you're nodding, Linda McKnight. That's all good.
It's wonderful. You know, you know your kids. Our caseworkers, Liz, as I'm sure, sees a lot of kids and does a lot of good things. But we see a lot of kids every day. Where you know what's happening to that kid every minute. You are the best advocate. If you think your kid needs some special services, if you think your kid needs, any kind of physical service, you got to speak up. Just as if they were your birth kids. You are their best cheerleader.
But it's not required.
No.
How do you encourage in the process of recruiting, training?
I don't even think you
mentoring?
Even have to encourage.
Usually you don't.
You don't. I think people, they become, most foster parents, these are their children, and they want them to be successful, and they're going to do whatever they can do. Sometimes even go against recommendations maybe in the court or what they want to have their voice heard about what they think is best for their kids. So I don't think really we encourage people. We never would remove a child because a foster parent thinks different than the way we think. Mm-hmm. We might have meetings about that and try to find out why we think different. And maybe there's information that's not being shared. But I would never want someone to feel that they could not advocate for a child.
What Sarah Hammond mentioned a second ago about bringing all the people together at the same time seems like a really logical approach. It's probably not always, you're not able to do it, all things being equal, but...
But we encourage, I think it's helpful for the caseworker. They have to visit the house monthly. Some caseworkers, based on the needs of kids, have to go there twice a month to see a kid. And if they're going to see a youth and the foster parent's there, and sometimes if both foster parents could be there, if it's a two-parent home, and the caseworker from the private agency, if there's a therapist... It's just like the more people there, then you hear the same information, you brainstorm the same concerns, and everybody comes up with a plan. It's just easier. Yeah. In the long run, it's best, but it's also easier for everybody.
Kate Cook, before we leave, I want you to tell people about what they can expect at the Joyride on Saturday.
Joy.
Real quick now, we only have
all
a
right.
minute.
There is a 10-mile cycling route that's all flat and all on path. Everything leaves from the Trek Store Columbus in Westerville location.
The Trek Store.
Trek Store. There's a 10-mile route, great for families and smaller kids. And then there is a 50-mile route that does a nice big loop up through Sunbury and comes around. So we got it going on. This is a party.
I'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah, Anne is our, you know, awesome, what I call you, the princess of public radio,
yeah.
Right? We have a band, we've got Yabo's Tacos, we got tons of food. I mean, this is truly a cycling joyride. The route, they went and marked the route yesterday, Columbus Outdoor Pursuits did it, and it says joy every quarter
every
mile
quarter,
with an
every
arrow.
Every dime of the proceeds
right.
goes to buy
every
a
dime.
Bike for mm-hmm.
So
a
register
child.
Online, look up Foster okay. Hope Joyride.
Foster Hope Joyride. Kate
right.
Cook, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Anne.
Former foster parent and founder and executive director of Bike Lady, Inc. Also, Linda McKnight of the Franklin County Children's Services. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Emily Castle, foster parent. Thank you so much, Emily.
Thank you.
And Sarah Hammond, another foster parent. Thanks to you.
Thank you.
And thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.